It's the Rick Emerson Show. We're live from Portland. Hello. Who is that? That looks like Nikki Cox, almost.
It's a Jordan something. She's famous in
England. Oh, yeah, she's in England. Yeah, she's a model. She's voluptuous, that's what they call her there. That's an unfortunate photograph of her.
Yeah.
All right, it's 503-733-2970, 503-733-2970. All right, and what do you know? Scotty wants to know if you know when you and your friends are going to House of Midnight. He wishes to come along and record your reactions as you are.
Oh, Scotty, no way, I don't trust him. He'll, like, shove me.
You don't trust him.
Because he'll shove me at whatever's popping out. I know.
Scotty J will shove me, whatever's popping out.
If some like creature thing is lunging at me, I know that Scotty will just like shove me at it.
He's got to be there to protect you.
I'm not telling him.
He wants you to be part of his next man on the street bit.
Sure he does.
All right, I'm just saying. All right, and then tomorrow. Now this isn't a thing that most of y'all should notice. Tomorrow we're actually going to be doing this program from the studios of our sister station, the new Movin' 107.5. It is the new, right?
I don't know.
Movin' 107.5. And the only reason I'm saying that is because we're going to be doing that tomorrow as a dry run for next week. Next Thursday, we're going to be doing our program from one of our other studios. Tom Likas is going to be in studio joining us for the final hour of our show next Thursday. Because next Friday, November 3rd, Tom Likas is going to be here in town, downtown, Barracuda from 3 to 7, doing his nationwide broadcast. He'll actually be doing the nationwide show from here next Thursday as well from one of our studios. But then next Friday, live from Barracuda downtown, a show not to be missed. So if you'd like to see the man that Scotty J calls Dad live next Friday, Tom Likas, 3 to 7 at Barracuda downtown, brought to you by Wild Turkey, Taboo Adult Video, and Team Quest Mixed Martial Arts. So do not miss it. Next Friday, November 3rd, Barracuda downtown, Tom Likas live. Speaking of live, let us now welcome live to the Rick Emerson Radio Program from the Dirty South, CNN Radio Correspondents, Ed McCarthy. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
Now, you are not...
I'm in St. Louis.
You are in St. Louis, because now this is... We were going to talk to you yesterday, but I think you were actually in transit yesterday.
What a story there. It was health-like.
And so, well, so you got to bring us up to speed here, because here's the thing. There's two things. A, I understand that most people in this republic of ours are sports enthusiasts. And so it pains me to tell you that, B, I know next to nothing about sports. And I'm zen with that fact. I'm aware of it. The audience knows that. But
doesn't matter.
I like to be able to talk about what the people are talking about. When it comes to sports, man, I just got nothing. You could fit my sports knowledge into the navel of a flea, Ed McCarthy. I've got nothing.
That doesn't make you bad. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's like, I look at sports, all these people. You don't have to be a stat guy. You can watch a game. It's entertainment.
The only sport that I even follow with any degree of regularity, not even as much as I used to. I used to be a boxing enthusiast because, I view it as such a pure kind of sport. But get me up to speed on what's going on. Because the World Series is happening. And is it true? Did they catch some guy with, a handful of goo, tampering with a baseball?
Well, it was supposed to be dirt, and it was rosin, and it was on his hand. Kenny Rogers, we're talking about. He was the World Series Game 2 pitcher. So they went out to the mound, and he went in and washed it off at the end of the inning. But they've gone back and looked at the videotape, and he's done it before. He did it in the ALCS series as well. So
now, rosin is the same kind. Is this the same kind of thing they talk about they use on a violin bow, right?
Yeah.
And so so what happens, what is the effect, and again, I don't just know this stuff, what is the effect of rubbing rosin on a baseball before you throw it?
It can change direction, especially when the weather is really cold, and it was a rainy night, we had snow flurries, it can do all kinds of things. But to his credit, he came out, he really didn't have to worry about any of that. If that was his intent, which I'm not saying it was, he came out and he pitched great. Two hits in eight innings. It was a really good performance.
It does seem like we're at a point in sports history where guys would not be trying to get anything over on you because there's the 1,000 cameras everywhere, and it seems like it's near impossible to get away with anything like that at this point.
Then they have the Fox cameras on him with the big circle around his hand. We were all watching that the monitors.
It's only where they're blowing it up CSI style on the screen.
Yeah, they were, It was really funny. So they've gone back now, done more investigation, and he said, he didn't even think about it. He says, you pick that stuff up, warm it up in the bullpen, and he says, I just washed it off, and that was the end of it. But They're still talking about it. You know, it's not going away, this whole thing.
Well, anyway, so the upshot of this is that, what are they sending you to watch the games? You're just getting paid to watch the World Series at this point. There are worse ways to make a living than that, my friend.
Well, that's true, you know, and I went down today. I've got a bunch of interviews out in front of Busch Stadium, got my media credential. You got to pick one up for each city, and, I had the American League one, so I had to pick this one up for tonight. So I just rolled back to the room now, and I'll be heading down for the game a little bit later. But I got to tell you, I got here last night, and I feel like I was lucky to be here because I was on this flight that was just unbelievable. They taxi out, they're ready to go, and then they say, we have a problem with the landing gear.
Oh, that's what you like to hear.
We think it's leaking something. They go back to the gate. Some guy walks through. He looked like Lurch with a flashlight. And he walks down the aisle. And the next thing you know, the pilot says, okay, we're just going to top off the tank and we're going to go.
Oh, see, the worst part is when they don't even tell you what it's leaking. They just say, it's leaking something. Because then you start to figure that not even they really know what the hell is going wrong with the plane.
Meantime, you know, they backed it up and the alarm was going off. I think that was the first clue. So this is, let's just tell you this because this just blew me away. We're ready to go for the second time. We're on the runway ready to go. And the flight attendant gets up and she starts going through the whole routine with the seatbelt and the oxygen mask. So I said to the guy next to me, I said, we're doing this again. And he looked at me and he says, you better pay attention this time.
Oh, great. That's like when they start talking about the water landing, which is just code for crashing into the ocean. That's the moment at which my brain just starts thinking, if I'm going to die a flaming death, I'm going to die a flaming death. What can you do?
What chance would you have when you hit the water?
That's what I'm saying. In the event of a water landing, there is no water landing. There is the plane flipping end over end and smashing itself to pieces in the Pacific. That's all there is.
I got to tell you this because I know you're going to go, but there's the two other things that just are unbelievable. First of all, I get caught to the extra search. So I go through that little puffer.
Now, is that where they pull you behind the curtain and give you the jelly finger, or is that where they just take you over and they spray you with the air that tells you if you've been, like, assembling plutonium in your basement?
Now they maybe go on this thing, and the thing goes, you know, they puff, puffs wind at you.
Right.
And then they were putting some kind of compound on my shoes, and, you know, I really don't think I look like a terrorist. But maybe I do. I don't know. So then, anyway, I had I'm getting off the plane. We're late. I'm trying to get a live shot in with KDKA in Pittsburgh. So I rush, I get that done, and I run down the, heading out of the thing, and then I start running back. I forgot my briefcase. So the TSA guys start screaming like, we have a big security breach here. So I'm really going to cause all kinds of problems at Lambert Field in St. Louis.
You're under suspicion already because you're already part of the liberal media conspiracy, my friend.
There you go.
You're already a suspect. All right. Well, enjoy the game and enjoy your travel back, and we will talk to you soon, mi compadre. There you go, Ed McCarthy in St. Louis. Thank you, Ed.
Okay, Rick.
There you go. CNN radio correspondent Ed McCarthy. All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. All right. The people are sending us questions that you can be asking Joshua Jackson.
Ooh,
when he gets inside. I don't know. Well, I'll wade through them. We'll get to all of those. So that is 2 weeks from tomorrow. Dawson's Creek star and doer of other stuff, Joshua Jackson, will be here, sitting right there, just feet away from Sarah Dillon.
That is so exciting.
We'll get a couple of these, and we'll break. We have more Tim Riley coming up and get this big gossip pile to get through and so forth. Here's Rob. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rob. Hi, Rick.
Hey, what's up, Rob? How you doing, man?
Hey, I got a couple celebrity combos for you.
All right.
How about Pope John Paul Stanley?
Pope John Paul Stanley is great. There's one that I could actually go as. Like, I got all the stuff at home to do that. Let's see. Pope John Paul Stanley. Pope John Paul Stanley. Speaking of which, note to Scotty J, we got to get on the tracking down Paul Stanley bandwagon because, you know, he's going to be here. Paul Stanley from Kiss is doing a solo tour.
With the house band,
The house band. So it's double, you know what, so that's how we could, that's our back door in there is either Nate Morton, who's the drummer for the house band. So don't let me forget about this, Scotty. We got to contact Nate Morton, who's the drummer for the house band, and see if through him I can talk to Paul Stanley. Because anybody who knows me, you know, I'm a huge Kiss fan. And everybody's favorite is Gene Simmons, except for me. Everybody latches right on to Gene Simmons, who was great. But growing up, Paul Stanley was the guy who really made a huge impact on me. And just huge, massive sections of what I do as an entertainer. It ripped off directly from that guy. So... Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. It's like with you, with Joshua Jackson, I don't know that Paul Stanley is my equivalent to Joshua Jackson, but he is on the list of guys that I got to interview before I die. And this is, as weird as radio can be and as stressful a career as radio can be and as weird as an industry as this is to work in, the great thing about radio or working in the entertainment industry is it does let you kind of get some of those things to do before I die items checked off your internal list. And Paul Stanley is definitely one of mine. All right. Rob, God bless you. That's Pope John Paul Stanley. Well done, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. There you go. Let's see. We'll do, we'll get the Chris here in a second. And Corey, this is Brandon. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Brandon, what's up?
Hey, Rick. I got three suggestions for you.
Okay.
I got Ray Charles Manson.
That's genius. Anybody who knows me knows that Charles Manson humor is the way to Rick Emerson's heart. Ray Charles Manson. And really, all you really need there is just sunglasses and like a chick with ironed hair next to you and a swastika on your forehead and you're set. All right. Fantastic. Ray Charles Manson. Well done. Sarah, you got to recruit more friends just so you can use some of these. Because that weird Al Gore one is too good not to use. I mean, it really is too genius just to go to waste.
Are you writing them all down?
I am. I got a big list. It's not a comprehensive list, but the standouts, like Ray Charles Manson, I'm writing that one down. What else do you got, Brian?
I've got a Curious George Bush. That was inspired by the SpongeBob Dole
and Curious George Bush. Curious George Bush, and that would go over especially well in Portland. People here would like that.
And right. The last two I've got are Little Richard Simmons.
Okay.
And one kind of more designed for you, Toby Keith Olbermann.
Fantastic. All you need to do is just like with a huge hat and just looking at the camera and saying things like, a time of great decision is upon this republic of ours. All right. Ray Charles Manson, it's hard to top that one, but Curious George Bush is great. All right, Brandon, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
All right, there you go. That's Brandon. Let's see here. Am I getting out of these? Somebody had sent me. Somebody had sent me Joshua Jackson, Elton John, Bonnie Ramsey. I'm just gonna close that right there. Here we go again. Did you know that? Yeah, ask Josh Jackson about growing up in Battleground. I cannot wait to hear him. I had a huge crush on him as well. So when was Dawson's Creek even on? I mean, it was on until when? It was through the 90s, right?
Yeah, it ended. I was still in college when there were a couple new ones. So I think maybe 2000.
All right. Well, we gotta make sure.
Yeah, I've seen that whole series because they play it on TNT. Well, they used to play them back-to-back every morning. They'd play two episodes a morning. So I would watch, 2 hours of Dawson's Creek every morning, and then they'd just go through the entire series and start all over again.
I think the equivalent for me might be getting somebody from, like Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something on. You know, like if you like it, like Allison Hannigan, like that.
Well, you can talk to him about Sarah Michelle Gellar because they were in Cruel Intentions.
That's right. That's well spotted, Sarah Dillon. God, you are fantastic. See, today my brain is working in low gear. My brain is not at full capacity. I'm at like 40% today. So I'm glad you're helping to pick up the slack. See, there you go. That makes the whole thing worthwhile, actually, just being able to ask him about Sarah
Michelle
Gellar.
I just want to ask him about working on the movie set with Lindsay Lohan.
Because is it Bobby that she's in? She's in this movie, Bobby? So this isn't the movie that they kicked her off of for being a spoiled whore, is it? Where they put up the letter saying, like, screw you, and you keep lapsing things up,
no,
and we're going to fire you.
I can't remember what... That was a different one. I just can't
imagine that she keeps getting hired. That's what I don't understand. I mean, does Lindsay Lohan have somebody, a massive fan base that I'm not aware of? You know what I mean? All right. Chris. We got multiple Chris's here. Chris, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. We're talking about the celebrity combinations for Sarah's upcoming Halloween party.
Yeah. O.J. Leno.
Okay. Well done. You know what? That one's so great because O.J., because it's initialed, it's just short and punchy. I mean, it's right to it. O.J. Leno. Okay, and that is where the pair of passes to House of Midnight, which is the most intense Halloween experience on Earth. I'm going to put you back on old O.J. Leno. All right. That's fantabulous. Let me get one more, and then I will read this. It's a great... it's doubly fantastic. Because it's a segue into this O.J. Simpson story, which is all kinds of unnerving. Let's get Chris number two. Oh, this is Boba Fett Chris. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you doing, Rick?
Hey, brother. What's up, man?
Oh, not much. I've been sitting here going back and forth with Mailman Chris on... We have a bunch of them.
What are you guys, like, sitting in a basement somewhere, like playing Car Wars?
Yesterday we went to Clyde's show, and in between stuff, we were just spitting them out because they just kept going and... getting worse.
I do have to say this, by the way. Now, I have some photos from the wedding that are on the way. A guy who is one of the photographers, one of the many people who's taken photographs at Aaron Geek in the City's wedding this weekend.
Right.
There is a great photograph that was taken of you and me outside the reception, where it's like I have my my Sonny Corleone outfit on, and you have you get the full on Boba Fett costume.
Is it with you holding the blaster?
No, well, there's one of me holding the blaster, and there's one of you holding it, and I'm just kind of giving I'm trying to give my best James Caan look. So, all right,
we have Little John Wayne Bobbitt.
Okay.
Lil Jon's a rapper.
And I'm aware. Lil John Wayne Bobbitt.
Like Lil Kim.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah. George C. Scott Bio.
from the Zapped era. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Then we went, we came up with Weird Al Gore, and then we went a step further and went Weird Al Gore Vidal.
Weird Al Gore Vidal. See, you get extra points there for being, see, that's like you capture the NPR demo with that. You get to be, that one's brainy as well.
Cat Steven Seagal.
Okay.
Marky Mark Ronchetti.
You've really put a lot of time into this.
Isn't it? Well, I've been on hold for 2 hours, so.
I'm doing the best I can.
I know. Jan Michael Vincent Price.
Jan Michael Vincent. I had a big argument with somebody the other day about Jan Michael Vincent and whether he was dead or alive.
I don't know. He probably drinking himself into a coma,
now,
if anything.
Didn't he? Now, I read some story the other day about how he... Not the other day, but I mean, it was a few weeks ago. They were name checking him as like one of the examples of he's like the David Caruso, one of those the fallen star types.
Well, yeah, you look at his '70s films, and then all of a sudden '80s hit, and bam, he just
totally. He hit Airwolf. He couldn't handle that massive Airwolf success.
No.
Jan Michael, I think he broke his spine or something at some point too. He like wrapped a car around a telephone pole or whatever. All right, so yeah, anything with Jan Michael Vincent is the way to my heart. All right.
Samuel L. Jackson Brown.
Okay.
Captain Lou Ferrigno.
Captain Lou Ferrigno.
And Rick Emmer's son, Koo Kim.
Okay. So that would just be me covered in panties, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well done. All right. Thank you, Chris, and thank you to mailman Chris as well, because I got the feeling this is sort of a tandem. This is sort of a tandem effort, the two of you.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
All right. There you go. All right. Let me read this O.J. Simpson story, and then we'll break. We'll come back with Tim Riley, and we will get more phone calls. Well, I'm surprised that they haven't had Jim Roop talking about this here. All right. This is from the National Enquirer, and as we always have to give this disclaimer these days, the National Enquirer is the least sued newspaper of its size in America, because ever since they got creamed in that terrible Burnett lawsuit years ago, they...
What happened with that?
They published, Tim would remember more of the details than I, but there was a famous lawsuit. This is the lawsuit that really changed the Enquirer from being a tabloid that published fictitious or ill-founded speculation into a tabloid that publishes founded speculation. In other words, they published not so much gossip now. They do publish news on the fringe and sort of tabloidy stories that you would think of as being typically tabloidy. But what the Enquirer no longer does, and Mike Walker, who's one of their reporters, will talk about this in great detail. He's on the Likas show a lot. What the Enquirer does is the Enquirer will often. A lot of tabloids will do this. They'll say that, well, rumors are that, or the word on the street reports that, or there is lots of speculation that so-and-so is da-da-da-da-da so-and-so. That's one thing. But if the Enquirer comes out and says, someone is addicted to heroin, or they say, someone was photographed leaving so-and-so's apartment. They don't say it unless they've got it. I mean, the Enquirer no longer, if you read a blanket statement in the Enquirer where they're not speculating, it's not a rumor, they're not idly pondering something, if the Enquirer now comes out and says something happened, they are very, because they got creamed in this Carol Burnett lawsuit where they claimed that she was an alcoholic. And I forget the actual incident. It was something that she'd been, seen vomiting in a gutter somewhere or whatever. But it turned out that they just made it up. And they got hit for just some huge amount of money, especially the times, 25 years ago. And they got hit for, $25 million or whatever. And from that point on, the Enquirer never again published something as fact if they did not have, three sources confirming that it was true. So anyway, and it's odd because O.J. Simpson, actually, the Enquirer, they were the first newspaper to break a lot of the things about the O.J. Simpson case, like the Bruno Mars. Molly Shue connection. They were the very first ones to do that. They were the first ones to break a lot of the information in the JonBenet Ramsey case. So the Enquirer is really a much more reputable newspaper than it used to be, and a much more reputable newspaper than people really give it credit for. This is just the creepiest story, and I read something about this in the Associated Press wire the other day, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it. But this is from the New National Enquirer, page 34. In a bombshell book that will rock America, O.J. Simpson finally confesses to the murder of the century and gives all the never-before-revealed horrific details of the bloody slaughter of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. The Inquirer has learned exclusively that O.J. Simpson has been working for months on the top-secret book, which will be published late this year, and he reveals he had an accomplice at the murder scene. Now, do you know what the title of the book is?
No, I didn't see it.
The title of the book is... If I Did It.
What?
11 years after being acquitted of the sensational killing, Simpson is being paid $3.5 million for revealing the blow-by-blow details of the brutal knife attack. O.J. Simpson doesn't have to worry about being prosecuted again for the murders because of the double jeopardy law. In the book, quote, he describes how he grabbed a knife from a man who accompanied him to Nicole's home and moments later found himself covered in blood, looking down at the bodies of Nicole and Ron. With its publication only weeks away, the tell-all blockbuster has remained the most explosive secret in publishing until now. O.J. Simpson describes falling in love with Nicole when she was a beautiful young blonde. He gives vivid details of the collapse of their marriage, and her, including her fling with his best pal Marcus Allen. Finally, the disgraced Hall of Famer gets to June 12, 1994, the evening when a double murder in Los Angeles made headlines around the world. Now, this is the creepy part. And again, this is in the Inquirer, but I have now read this in other news sources. He prefaces these pages by almost half-heartedly claiming, wait for it, that what you're about to read is hypothetical, says the source. But no one will be convinced of that. The working title is If I Did It. But Simpson's account of the double murder is so detailed and chillingly realistic, with O.J. himself as the central figure, it leaves no doubt that it's a confession of what really happened. Throughout the book, he describes Nicole as the enemy. Simpson writes that he and Charlie, which is a pseudonym for a friend, jumped into his Bronco and drove to Nicole's home intending to do more than scare her. He describes being behind her at the condo and putting on the wool cap and gloves he wore for golf on a cold day. Then he grabbed the knife, blah, 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 blah. So that's,
That publishing firm is going to have that on their souls. They're giving a murderer $3.5 million.
I can't believe that nobody else is talking about it, especially because, again, it's obviously not just a thing that the Inquirer is making up, because I've read it in a couple different news sources now. So what obviously happened is that the guy is just so... he's just lost touch with any semblance of reality. But of course, as they always say, that you know, the murderers are always just driven to confess. They say that you just always, eventually, you have to blurt it all out to somebody. You know, the people are just driven to confess things like this. So apparently, what happened is it's some book, and the working title of the book is If I Did It. And he got paid $3.5 million for it, and he goes through and he just describes the entire thing, blow by blow, inch by inch, moment by moment, with this like page and a half preface about how it's all theoretical and hypothetical, but that if he had done it, this is exactly how it would have gone down, which is just the creepiest. I mean, the whole thing is just like it was off the charts, morbid and weird. It really is just. It just staggers me that it's being published. But anyway, as this unfolds, Roop's undoubtedly going to be talking about that. We should break here. We'll come back. We have more calls. Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. Later on, we have yet another pair of tickets to House of Midnight we're going to be giving away. Dennis Pitsenbarger is going to be here as well. Like is coming up at 3. Don't forget, he is live from Barracuda next Friday, 3 to 7. Next Friday, 3 to 7. More details to come in the next week and a half. You'll be listening. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. It's the Rick Emerson Show. We're live from Portland. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Rick, this email says, wanted to let you know that your show is indeed so hilarious it almost killed me twice. I was in mid-swallow of a large mouthful of water when Tim Riley being assaulted in a moose costume came up. Water shot out. This is the story that Tim told yesterday about being in a moose costume. Would they kick you in the groin?
Yes. Today I'm showing more respect.
um, When the story of Tim Riley being assaulted in a moose costume came up, water shot out of my mouth, my nose, all over my desk, and a good portion of it landed in my pants. So there I was, running around at work looking for paper towels while coughing and choking with a big wet spot on the front of my pants. Just this evening, I sat enjoying my baked potato, an apparently barely literate 90-year-old man called, and in his quavering, raspy voice, set about telling me about an exciting new direction for Oregon. He said new direction twice in about 10 seconds, again with the choking and the coughing, and then a piece of baked potato shot out of my nose. Just wanted to... just wanted to say that is the highest compliment we could possibly receive, for baked potato to come out of one's nose. Well, we're glad to help, sir. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Let's see. Here's Tim Riley, ladies and gentlemen. He's at the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, Nick Cannon says he thinks Hillary Rodham Clinton could win the presidency. He says she's a formidable candidate. I think she can win, but I hope she doesn't. Then he talks about Obama Osadan, or whatever his name is.
I have no idea who you're talking about.
That fellow Barack Obama.
Okay.
I get him confused with Osama Obama.
And that's not a real person, you know.
No.
I get confused with a fictitious man who lives in my head. Okay.
Well, I have seen Obama on a couple of occasions. I think he's an attractive fellow, says Cheney. But probably not.
I'd like to make him my gentleman friend and rub him with essential oils.
If he wasn't a Republican, he might.
I would like to gently cup his buttocks and hold him close.
Let's talk to Jeffrey Skilling on Bank B, shall
we? I thought he was dead. Oh, no, that's Ken Lay.
Yeah.
All right.
Jeffrey Skilling is very much alive. He maintains the belief that he's innocent of the charges against him. He's being sent to prison for 24 years. He says, once again, he's innocent.
I believe, I mean, deep down, I mean, this is no act or anything. I believe I'm innocent.
No one else believes it.
All he tried to do was to make Enron profitable again.
We tried to sell the international assets. Had we been able to sell the international assets, it would have been $5 to $7 billion of liquidity, which we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, a guy's being beaten in a small cell right now.
Skilling will put $60 million in a special fund.
The restitution order is subject to the appeals. So the money and the property will be held in abeyance and held by the government in abeyance until the appeals are exhausted.
They ought to say, you know, that's a way that they could clear up that national. Is this in California, right?
This is in Houston.
In Houston. Well, you know, I mean, they've got it, it's such a national debt. The way that they ought to get rid of that national debt is that there's just some reality show or some pay-per-view channel or like an on-demand thing where you can watch celebrities living in prison. How gratifying would that be? How much would you pay just for every month just to watch, you know, Jeffrey Skilling have to work in the prison laundromat somewhere, you know?
Oh,
just see him in a cafeteria being assaulted by an auto thief. I think you could probably pull in $19 a person for something like that. Like if you took what's the last big, like that James Traficant guy. Whatever happened to him? I would have paid to watch that guy in jail.
Oh, that's the guy with the bad toupee.
The bad wig. Yeah, I have no idea where that guy went to.
But he's still in jail, apparently.
All right.
A multi-$1 million lawsuit is causing headaches for Hyatt hotel chains. Anita Torres, a former reality show star and a heavily photographed South Beach model.
Star of what show?
I don't know. Anita Torres.
I know that of course. So what am I thinking? I know I talk about this a lot, but it's become very hard to keep track of celebrities now because everybody has become...
They have their own reality show.
Yeah, this is not even 50 minutes. Everybody's famous for like a minute and a half.
They keep to make.
I'm glad that I even kind of know who Joshua Jackson is. I pity the talk show hosts of the future. I weep for people who come and they have this gig in like 15 years because they're going to say, hey, remember that wacky has-been celebrity from 2006? And nobody's going to remember who it is because it's going to be on some niche program that was watched by like half of 1% of the population. Mm-hmm. So, and you can already see a little bit of that here because, you know, with the proliferation of the cable channels and so forth, that like Joshua Jackson, even I only have kind of a vague notion of who that guy is. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, that's just as the networks were starting to split up and like the WB and UPN and so forth were coming up.
I can't find Joshua Jackson's MySpace page, but I did find the most amusing MySpace page I've ever seen.
Did you say that all the Joshua Jacksons were black?
Yes, except for this one. It distracted me because it's a picture of a guy, like, tongue-kissing his girl, and his slogan is, Brandy is mine forever. And what he likes to do is look at his girlfriend. I like to look at my girlfriend. About me. I'm getting married in 2 years to the greatest woman in the world. Her name is Brandy.
She is currently being stored in a freezer in my basement.
I don't want to meet no one. I already found her.
Is that Brandy with an eye?
Is there a little heart over the eye? Yeah.
They're always the most lovable. More lovable.
And all the pictures.
And with a Y.
And all the pictures are just them kissing.
Well, you know my thing about that. If you are a woman, and I don't mean any disrespect here, but if you are a woman and your name ends in an E sound, the odds are about 30% higher that you are trashy in some fashion, and you know that that's true. You know, Brandy, Misty, Debbie, Sally, if your name ends in E, the odds are, you know, the odds are exponentially greater that you have worn stretch pants at some point in your life, or that you have a boyfriend who, you know, you have a boyfriend who breathes a lot with his mouth open.
Ooh, I'm getting, and then Brandy says, I'm getting married in 2 years to the greatest man alive. His name is Joshua Jackson. I'm going to have a great family. I have twin sisters.
I'm
going to
reproduce endlessly and foist my stupid children upon the rest of the world. I will spend endless years wandering through a food court, clutching a ham sandwich in one hand.
They have the exact same profiles. Hersa says, I love to play volleyball and look at my boyfriend. Hang out with my friends.
So basically their hobbies are staring stupidly at one another while sitting there like over a milkshake at a 50s restaurant.
Yeah.
That's basically what it amounts to. I like to look vacantly into my boyfriend's eyes while breathing loudly through my mouth and getting fatter.
It's so strange. You live in Alabama.
Really? I'm stunned. I'm horrified. Oh, speaking of that, do you remember that guy, Ryan, who gave the toast at Aaron's wedding over the weekend? And I know you do remember him. Apparently there was some... Yeah, apparently there was some unpleasantness because he was referred to as being from Alabama, when apparently he's not just... He lives there now, but he was all offended because he was introduced as being, and now all the way from Alabama, Ryan. Now, I understand that he was born in California, but if you live somewhere and then you come here, you're from wherever it is you came here from.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get on a plane in Alabama and you fly to Oregon, you're from Alabama. I understand the desire to distance oneself from that because of people like Joshua Jackson. And now, did you look through all of the Joshua Jacksons?
No, there are 40 of them. Or there are 40 pages.
All right. Oh. aren't there like...
He doesn't even have any fake... Like, you know, usually celebrities have fake, you know, people who try to pretend to be them.
Totally like that Eric Estrada guy that's one of my friends on MySpace. You know, remember in the early days of MySpace? This is how fast culture changes now. Do you remember in the early days of like 6 months ago when... Because I know Sarah was on MySpace before we all were, but like when we as a country were kind of getting on the MySpace tip, as it were. Do you remember the first time that somebody who had a celebrity's name tried to be your MySpace friend and you were all excited for like a day until you realized that it wasn't real? Like, John Cleese wants to be my MySpace friend, you know? And then it's, you know, it turns out it's just some dick. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, talk about Wheel of Misfortune. Sometimes good luck just follows bad luck. It seems to be the case for a Colorado man who won a huge chunk of change on Wheel of Fortune. Scott McDonald spun the wheel to the tune of $47,000, but is a convicted felon. He owes more than $180,000 to his victims after pleading guilty to felony theft. The former television producer was given a little more than a decade to repay hundreds of thousands of dollars. He said he plans on using his game show winnings toward his judgment. The show never asked about his criminal history when he applied to be on it.
Now, I didn't think you won actual money on Wheel of Fortune. I thought you had to buy crap with it. Isn't that the thing? Isn't that you win like 40 grand, but then you have to buy like a ceramic zebra that costs like $8,000 or something? Boy, you talk about
I haven't watched that show since the 70s.
I haven't watched Wheel of Fortune since probably... because, as I've noted on this program, there are two types of people in this world. There are Jeopardy people and there are Wheel of Fortune people. And it's sort of like, you know, like you're in pupa stage for a while where you could go either way. And then once you hit around 11 or 12, you either settle on Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune. And if you settle on Wheel of Fortune, that's fine. You know, spending a lot of time staring into your boyfriend's eyes at a mall and then going home to guess what word could possibly have three E's and a Q in it. But I remember watching that program, and it was a completely and tediously uninteresting show to me, I think largely because I'm a guy. And I think Wheel of Fortune, to draw sort of a broad stereotype, I think Wheel of Fortune is more of a female program because the reward is that you get to shop. The reward is that they give you a big bunch of money and go, look, buy some stuff. But it's like stuff that you would never, ever want. I mean, Wheel of Fortune, this has to be said, Wheel of Fortune just is, it really is just like a white trash wet dream. You know what I mean? Just the stuff that they sell on that program, just the weirdest, ugliest, gaudiest crap that you could ever possibly imagine. And there's always this moment on Wheel of Fortune, too, when the guy has won, whatever, like 15 grand, and he buys like a bed set, and then he buys like a couch and a rug, and then there's this terrible moment when he's got, I don't know, like $4,200 left, and there's nothing left that he wants. And so he ends up having to buy a cuckoo clock for like $3,900, and then he just sits at home, you know, staring at it for the rest of his life, glumly, eating an endless supply of Rice Aroni.
You could buy that from Parade Magazine.
along with the baby doll with the realistic hand-rooted hair. Are you looking at James Vanderbeek's profile? He has a MySpace page?
I'm trying to find... Oh, here it is.
You're desperately trying to find Joshua Jackson's MySpace profile.
I found Pacey Witter fans.
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
And they all live in Cape Side. That's where the show was based.
Fantastic. All right. I'm going to give you five phrases you have to say to him. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
The biological father of David Banda, that's the 13-month-old boy from Malawi Madonna plans to adopt, said he didn't realize the pop singer was taking the toddler for good.
She said she was just taking him out for ice cream.
Or bowling. Last week, Malawian officials said Madonna had been granted an interim order to adopt Banda and could be given a waiver or exemption, allowing her to skirt a new law that prohibits non-residents from adopting Malawi children. They say they expected Banda to visit and spend time with Madonna, who has homes in the United States and Britain, while waiting for a hearing on the application.
I'm unclear about how it is that this whole thing happened, because the baby... Okay, this is the Malawian baby that Madonna adopted.
Everybody wants a Malawian baby this year.
At first, it was an orphan. Now the baby has a dad.
Hmm. So the dad gave the baby to the orphanage because he couldn't take care of it.
Oh, is that true?
Yes.
So it wasn't like she didn't just show up at his house, like...
He put the baby in an orphanage.
Oh, well, then what's he bitching about? Shut your hole, Malawian guy, whatever your name is.
Well, she's going to be an Oprah tomorrow, so you'll find out.
Well, there you go. All right, here's, let's see, Rick, how about RuPaul Lind? Paul Lind, yeah, you know, nobody, that's a thing that nobody ever does. Nobody ever does a good Paul Lind, except for that guy in Stephanie Miller. He does a good Paul Lind impression. Let's get a couple of these, and we'll continue with Tim Riley. Corey, hello, sir.
Hello.
Hey.
How you doing, Rick?
What's up?
I've got a few names here for you. I've been on hold a while. If there's anybody that can come as a couple, they can come as Billy Bob Marley and Angelina Jolie Harvey Oswald.
Angelina Jolie. I thought you were going to go the Angelina Jolie from the corporate accounts payable. Angelina Jolie Harvey Oswald is pretty great. See, I like that one because it's like it's many, many names thrown together there. That's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Billy Bob Marley is good as well.
We got Axl Rose McGowan.
Okay.
James C. Kirk Cameron.
James C. Kirk Cameron. That's badass. You just have to clutch like a tricorder in one hand and a Bible in the other, and there you go, and you're set.
John Quincy Adam Sandler.
You really have had a lot of time to think on this.
I have.
And
Arthur C. Clarke Griswold.
He has been waiting for a very long time.
No, I understand. We're just...
I got Elton Johnny Cash. I don't know if that was...
Elton Johnny Cash! Sir, you are the winner of the final pair of House of Midnight tickets today.
Oh, beautiful.
Elton Johnny Cash is goddamn brilliant. Corey, I'm going to put you on hold, and Scotty will get your information.
I got one more for you.
All right.
Salvador Dolly Parton.
Salvador, is that where you just like your boobs are all bent in half and dripping off a tree? That's an unpleasant image. I'm sorry I said that. Elton Johnny Cash... Okay, we'll go ahead and get the rest of these calls because this is a thing that I find endlessly amusing. And if you're high, by the way, this is probably a hilarious show. It's funny under the best of circumstances, but I mean, it's really, just, if you're high, if you're stoned, this is hilarious. Elton Johnny Cash. That really is great. I don't know that can be taught. That's up there with Weird Al Gore. Kevin, hello, sir. Kevin. Give me a K. So Kevin's was Estelle Getty Lee. All right, here's Tim. So where's Estelle Getty these days? That's a thing that I think about sometimes. All right, here's Tim Riley.
I'll have to find out and let you know.
I thought she died.
No, because she was the youngest of all of them.
She's probably alive because we think she's dead.
Yeah, that's the way it works here. It's sort of a George Costanza,
she's
the opposite of whatever you think.
In her garden right now.
Yes, sitting around. Yeah, because, you know, because she was really only like 50 when they did that show, and she looked like she was like 500, but she was actually the youngest of all of them. Here's Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
Investigators are scheduled to return to an Ohio State dormitory where an 18-year-old freshman student was killed in an apparent elevator accident. Andrew Polakowski died Friday night in the incident. An investigation into what caused the elevator's doors to open in between floors has started.
Well, wait. They open between floors?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. Wait, so it was between, like, the second and the third floor, and they open? What, did he try to jump out or something?
Let's see here. I'll have to delve deeper into this. Some students say they were taking different routes to get to their rooms. We've been avoiding it because of what happened to him. It could happen to anybody. Police said Polakowski was killed when he tried to exit a moving elevator on the third floor of Stradley Hall residence building. He was caught between the building and the elevator and became trapped.
Okay, well, if the elevator's still moving,
he died of suffocation.
Word to the wise. If the elevator's still moving and you're seeing the floors go by, why don't you just hang tight for a while?
So these are college students, they don't think.
Seriously, take some stairs every now and again. Does it hurt to walk? You got a problem with exercise? Jesus.
He's not listening now.
Okay.
These elevators are inspected twice each year, and it is the school's responsibility to fix any maintenance problems.
Well, and it's your responsibility not to be an idiot and not to get out of the elevator if it's... Look, if the elevator door opens and you see a floor sliding by, that's God's way of telling you just to miss that class. Just hang out for a bit.
The deceased is described as popular and friendly. A pretty nice kid.
And small. All right.
A shuttle bus will be provided for any student who wishes to attend the funeral.
All right, there you go. Well, let's break here. We'll come back at the top of the hour. We will revisit, actually, the Ministry of Truth. We have some other calls to get to. Dennis Pitzenbarger is going to be here. I have... whose phone number is this?
Well, Rick, that's Kevin Federline's phone number.
This isn't Kevin Federline's phone number.
We should call it and find out.
I thought you were kidding about that. Really?
No.
I found it on the Internet. We'll see if it's right. Remember when we found Ashley Simpson's phone number and it was right?
I do remember that.
Yeah.
That was back at Entercom, right? Did we leave a message or was it busy?
No, it was already full.
It was already full.
This is right after Paris Hilton's sidekick got hacked.
I don't even know what we would say to Kevin Federline. What if he answered?
He won't answer.
All right, we're totally calling it when we get back. Hey, it's the Rick Emerson Show. We are live from Portland on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere. Back after this. I knew you'd care was over.